Joining me on the Neil Wilkins podcast today is Caleb Roach, who is a fellow marketing consultant. I'm based obviously in the UK. You can probably tell by the accent, and Caleb isn't. He's US side. Welcome to the episode, Caleb.
Hey, Neil. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
What we decided to do before we pressed the record button was to kind of, I guess, compare notes in terms of all things kind of marketing trends and sort of developments for 2024. I mean, it's very timely to do this kind of a conversation early in the year because there's still people planning. I know a lot of our clients are here, and I'm sure you could sort of reflect this too, have done planning sort of towards the back end of last year. But there are still, you might call them the laggards, but there are still some who are, you know, knowing they have to plan, but they're kind of just putting it off a little bit. And I thought it would be a very interesting time here to just have a conversation about what we're seeing emerge as opportunities, maybe some of the threats in the marketplace, and just really explore what marketing kind of means to businesses of all sizes right here at the start of this year. So how does that sound for you?
I love it. And I think especially on the, cross continents too, I think it's always good to compare because, you know, we always have conversations with people across in Australia and in Asia, and it's amazing. You know, even you look at fashion or you look at marketing or, you know, supply chain, and it's fascinating seeing how big of a difference there is, but at the end of the day, it's all similar. And so whether someone's behind the trends, ahead of the trends, it's always fun to kind of see where we're at and how that relates. So I think it's a great conversation that's going to happen.
So do you see kind of differences at the moment then in particular market sectors? I mean, here in the UK, I would say there are certain sectors that are thriving and booming, even though the economic conditions are a little bit challenging in some areas. And some markets are kind of, I would say, probably shrinking or really on almost a sort of a holding pattern where they're kind of waiting to see what's going to happen. Do you see from your clients, do you see a kind of a growth mindset with some, and if so, which ones do you see kind of really sort of going for it right now?
Yeah, so it kind of seems interesting. I mean, to your point, I think the US, from our perspective, and again, I think if you talk to 30 different people, everyone would feel differently, but as just a general consumer plus someone that's in the marketing side, I think it almost feels like we're still brinking on the edge of a recession. And I say that just from how it feels. I don't, the technical aspects of it, I'm not a financial consultant, I'm a marketing consultant. So I'm probably off on that potentially, but it almost feels like in the conversations we're having, it's a, you know, on one side, a lot of our clients feel like they have to basically conserve cash, be very careful with what they're doing, be very careful with any objectives, and they're keeping their growth goals, you know, pretty much flat. Like if they can continue at where they're at right now, they'll consider that success. And those are more of the clients that are like in the manufacturing side or things that it just kind of feels like it's maybe a little bit more volatile, so that they're not for sure. Like the financial services side, like, you know, look at home services, for instance. You know, you've got, for instance, here, you know, an HVAC company, their prices have increased. Now that's, it's pretty high. You've got, you know, very little spending power on, you know, consumer level where someone doesn't have $15,000 to spend on a new HVAC system. So either they're financing that or, you know, they might be coming out of their cash reserves. And if they're doing that, interest rates are really not, you know, beneficial at this point. And so unless it's like extremely necessary for this person to get an HVAC unit, it seems like HVAC purchases have gone down. So obviously, while they're still bullish, some of these services are, you know, are necessary. There's also an aspect of, you know, the consumer can't buy, they don't want to buy. It's like conversion rates are dropping because of that simple fact of, you know, while if it's a smaller product, maybe someone will buy it. In my opinion, from what we're seeing, consumers are staying very careful with their wallet and what's coming out of their wallet. So on one side, you have this like, you know, side where you're dealing with more, let's say B2C, where, you know, consumers are tightening up a little bit, it feels like they're not spending as much discretionary, things like that. But then on the other side, where, you know, like more of the B2B level, we're seeing an increase in spend across our B2B clients because, you know, most companies, if they're large enough, if they're like in the mid-size where they're not too big, where they're going through layoffs right now, they're not too small where, you know, they're really concerned about the economy, really concerned about their cash balance, but they're mid-size where they're operating well, they're, you know, cash flow is coming in, they've got operating reserves. They're taking advantage of that and kind of going full on in the marketing side. So Kind of a long-winded answer to say, you know, we're definitely seeing it on both ends, and it seems like it's kind of this, you know, mystery of what industries are going to be performing better. It feels like a boom and bust. What happens if you overinvest in marketing right now? The economy goes down, but then again, can you ever overinvest in marketing if you're in the right channel? So again, I don't know if you're feeling the same way, but it kind of feels like this really weird pattern that we're in that I don't know if we'll be able to get out for the next year.
Yeah, I would certainly reflect that. I think exactly what you said there, what we're seeing here. And I think one of the words that you really accurately pointed out there was this word caution. I think there is this kind of level, or even if it's a perception of being slightly cautious. I mean, you could argue if you've been super positive, it's not caution, it's actually being mindful. In other words, we're making purchase decisions either on behalf of businesses or as consumers. We're just a little bit more mindful. So we're not just going to spend the cash and we're not just going to go for it or maybe buy two of something. We're going to be really careful, really considered. And for me as a marketer, I don't know how you feel about this yourself, but for me as a marketer, that's an exciting opportunity because it's almost then a filter. The good guys, the successful guys, the guys that are going to add value are going to be the winners and everybody else is going to really struggle. And I, as a marketer, that excites me. That feels the right way because it's almost self-selection then, isn't it?
Yep. Well, it's actually funny. We were reflecting this as a team last week. So, you know, going into 2024, one of the interesting points that we're having with conversations we're having with clients is, you know, these clients that are very cautious to spend money or, you know, maybe they don't see the value in our services at this point. You know, why would we invest in search engine optimization? Or, you know, a lot of companies are seemingly certain companies are very hesitant to spend any money on a marketing consultant, which, you know, to their point, we can understand. But to some level, you know, it's like saying, well, I can fix my garage door, so why would I hire someone to do it? Until you realize like the springs are dangerous and could basically kill you. It's like, okay, well, we'll have a professional out. And so we're having these conversations and these clients that are very, you know, careful and a little bit overzealous on what they're preparing for. Like they've got a good cash balance. They're fine. They had, you know, an 800% plus return from their marketing last year. And they're very hesitant to spend even a dollar more. You know, they want to spend less dollars. It's like, this is kind of the writing on the wall of maybe this is not a good fit for a client. So what's interesting from a marketing consultant perspective is it kind of gives you the ability to kind of filter through your clients every year and say, you know, again, you don't want to cut a client too quick, but you know, what is a client wanting to do? Because our job is to help inform our clients. And if they're not listening or if they're not wanting to invest when we have all the data behind it, and that kind of plays into the role of data and personalization, is if you have the data from 2 years of hyper successful years, why not continue to invest those dollars? And so it kind of leads to this really interesting confliction from both marketing consultant side, because we're supposed to guide our clients in the right direction. We're supposed to, our goal is to provide recommendations based on what we're seeing in data and from what we're seeing in past years. And when your client doesn't listen to you, what do you do? So it kind of provides an interesting key for us marketing consultants.
That is interesting, isn't it, really? And when you use the word investment there, I thought, oh yeah, now this is something that I'm hearing a lot. And in fact, I did a webinar only last week, actually, just on this whole topic of trying to change the narrative from marketing cost or marketing budget to being marketing investment. Because just by definition, that means you need to see a return. Because if you invest money in something, just by its nature, you want to see a return. Whereas I think a lot of us, myself included, over the years have almost kind of shot ourselves in the foot about this one, because we've said, oh yeah, it's a marketing budget, you've got to put some marketing budget aside, and that feels like a spend. And of course, somebody who doesn't really live and breathe marketing then may well think, okay, well, that's a spend, so I can reduce spend, that's fine. But if it's positioned as an investment, then you are looking for a return. So even if you don't understand how the marketing works, you know there's going to be some comeback from it. Do you think we've kind of got it wrong? We've been using the wrong language.
I think so. And I think as marketers, I think we've done a pretty terrible job of setting the wrong expectations, just from what I've seen as well. You know, I think, going back all the way to COVID, let's say, I think COVID until now has been an incredible time for marketers to be able to get really great results for their clients. Ad spend is, as a marketplace, ad spend has kind of dropped. So, numbers can be a little bit easier for us to get, you know, sort of certain cost per thousand impressions. You know, we can get that down pretty cheap. Results have been pretty easy to get. And so we've seen kind of a shift from the marketers that are, you know, let's say guaranteeing a return on for their clients or a certain number, where realistically they really can't guarantee that, but they're kind of hoping that it works. We're seeing kind of this reconditioning for our clients of the money that they're allocating for a budget. There's always some sort of data and some sort of objective behind it. And we have to reshape the way that we think about it and our clients think about that as a marketing perspective. Because if you think about it, you know, again, is there such a thing as wasted ad spend? One could argue yes, and one could argue no. The one side could say, well, we didn't get a certain amount of leads, so we did not generate the core objective, which is lead generation. But what kind of in turn to think about it is the stock market doesn't go up every day. So it's not like every day you're going to continue, you know, seeing these positive results. You might walk backwards. You might have a month where it, you know, drops, things like that. So if you think about it from that perspective, what you're doing is you're spending advertising dollars to get in front of people. And I think as marketers, I think we over and undervalue the influence of our impressions that we're making. You know, from one perspective, we don't want to sell our clients just on impressions because it's kind of a vanity metric. But the other piece, we're not just spending money and just wasting it. You're getting in front of your core audience. And if you're targeting the right method, you are making a brand impact. And so I think, you know, shifting to that investment mentality of, you know, everyone invests every month hoping that for the future that they're taken care of. We don't know if we're going to have $1 million, $2 million, or 500,000, but we're hoping based on data that if we continue to go on the right path, if we continue to invest, we're going to see that retirement balance increase and get to the point where we can retire. Now, the same thing with marketing is we're not going to see the minute that we put a dollar into Facebook, the lead comes in. We're going to start delivering impressions and making that impact. And over with consistency, if you've made a frequency of 6 with your audience and you've delivered these ads, you're probably going to, you know, encourage them to purchase. And so I think of this investment model of marketing where we're not only just looking for leads, but we're also trying to make a broad impact within your audience. And what that could mean is clicks and impressions that you're getting and maybe some email addresses where you can kind of warm them up. So to your point, another long-winded answer, but I think there's something to be said about, you know, reshifting this mindset of just generating leads for our clients to how do we help them prepare for the future of generating email addresses and setting up drip campaigns, things like that, that is going to be a lot more sustainable than just lead generation in general.
There's a balance here, isn't there? Which is almost like anybody could come up with the sweet spot of what that percentage is between short term, long term. I mean, they just win, wouldn't they? Every single time. And do you think there is a sweet spot here? I mean, is it, do you think, you know, 80-20? I mean, everything seems to be 80-20, it's Pareto principle, but is it kind of 80% today with a nod towards 20% for the future? Or is it the other way around where you spend 20% for your lead generation, but 80% is this more patient, more organic kind of brand building approach? Do you think it's 80-20 or is it somewhere more central than that?
I truly think, and this is the marketing consultant answer in me, I truly think it depends on the client. Because, you know, let's put two different examples out there. So one, let's think about a, you know, 5-year established business that maybe already has the revenue goals, the revenue that they want, and they're just trying to grow. So, you know, their goal is, what can we accomplish in the next 10 years that can propel us for a sale? Let's say it's as owned by a small business owner. In the next 5 years, they want to sell, so they want to position really well. Well, in my mind, it might be a 50-50 allocation or maybe a 40-60 where we're trying to generate business and increase their business for the time being. But then a long-term mindset of 60% of spend is going towards collecting email addresses, you know, getting product research, you know, all these different types of things where it's going to position them well over the next 5 years for more substantial growth. You know, that might be a little bit slower versus if, let's say, a 1-year business that does not have the business, every dollar needs to stretch. Well, we might do like a 90-10 allocation because, you know, they really can't afford to continue to invest in long-term growth strategies. So, you know, I don't know if you would agree with that, but I think it truly depends on the business and, you know, what their 5 to 10 year goal is. Are they expecting to be in business for 5 to 10 years? Are they trying to sell? You know, what does that look like? Are they trying to be a long-term corporation? Things like that. So, I mean, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, that's a great question, isn't it? To kind of just keep this one sort of going around. I guess a lot of the time, you know, as marketers, we always think when we want to personalize something, we're always thinking of the customer, personalize the product, personalize the experience, personalize the value. But I think actually what we've got to do is personalize the theory here for ourselves and actually say there is no one size fits all. And that is a great answer with two very, very clearly different types of organization. So when we're building this strategy, it is about kind of taking a hard look at yourself and saying, look, where is my vision for this business? You know, what do I actually want to achieve? And if this is a cash money-making machine, then that is one answer all the way through to, no, I'm building a legacy brand that is going to, you know, stand the test of time 30, 40, 50 years out, and I want my family to come into it, etc. That would be a very, very different answer, wouldn't it? And so the strategy then is very driven by the vision, the mission, the purpose, you know, those very, very high level things. Do you think, even though, as we're saying, you know, things like the economy is tight, you know, globally, you know, there's a lot of kind of this caution going on. Do you still think, though, Caleb, that there's almost an opportunity here to spend probably more time becoming strategic than there is worrying too much about the tactics? Because it feels like if you are strategic, you're going to win in the long run anyway, as long as you're surviving today, rather than just worrying about where that next sale's coming from.
Yep. Well, okay, so perfect example. I saw something online the other day. I was reading a news story, and you know, Gymshark, which you're probably familiar with in your neck of the woods. You know, I think we've grown accustomed to these overnight success stories, you know, where I mean, quite honestly, I became known of Gymshark, what, 2 years ago, kind of during COVID when they started becoming a big thing, you know, in the fitness apparel industry. And it almost felt like they like appeared overnight. Like they set up this company. Like in my mind, my brain, it's like it feels like they started this company, they really pushed, and now they're, you know, like a $1 billion company. Well, what's fascinating is I saw a story that they've been in operation since 2013. Gymshark has. So the owner started stitching Gymshark by himself. Like he was doing all the sewing, he was creating the product, things like that. And eventually, 10 years later, they grew. So I think what we're used to is we see these companies that it feels like they like just suddenly appeared overnight. Like now they're a $1 billion brand and they did all the right things. They probably spent enough on marketing and wow, they did the right partnerships. They got the right influencers, things like that. But in my mind, what that was it was a combination of 10 years of strategic marketing, you know, behind what they were doing. And while some years might not have been as successful as others, I think to your point, one of the things that we can do as business owners or marketers is how can we strategically plan for the next 10 years? And when do we kind of set our goals of by this certain time, we want to be at this level. We want to be hiring influencers. We want to be, you know, having products sent out to different types of people, or we want to get to this level of ad spend. So, you know, to your question, I think from a tactic approach versus strategy, I think it all has to be strategy based with some, you know, deviances based on did the economy crash? Are we, you know, are consumers getting tighter with spending? Things like that. But at the core, having a strategy will typically never let you down. If you stick to the strategy, I mean, it's the principle of owning a business. If you wake up every day and you work on your business and you put the time in, most likely you're going to have a high threshold of success. Now, if you wake up and you think like, okay, well, today I'm going to make some money and then tomorrow I'm not going to, and you're just kind of playing it day by day, you know, tactics where you're trying these different tactics, traditionally your threshold for success is much lower. So on the same token of marketing, if you're continuing to do the same things over and over and continuing to work off of the strategy, in my mind, and I don't know if you agree with this, I think that leads to a higher level of success from some level.
And I think we would say, you know, both of us will have seen, you know, multiple examples of that playing out in a really practical sense. I mean, Gymshark obviously, you know, is a great example of, you know, that staying power, you know, staying true to the vision, etc. But I'm sure, you know, at a more local level, we've both seen, you know, many examples where people are in it for the long game. So I wonder then why it is that a lot of us, as business owners, entrepreneurs, marketers, why we get so distracted by the stuff that is, you know, the vanity metric, you know, the number of followers that the competitor has. Somebody gets a little viral post that suddenly, you know, becomes something, and it's a short little burst of activity, but it's such a distraction. You know, something we read in the media or in the press suddenly becomes, oh, we've got to adapt, or, you know, a competitor posts something actually in socials that makes us feel really kind of negative about ourselves. Well, why do you think we listen so much to this? You know, because Gary Vee, if you're listening to Gary Vee, you'd say just ignore all of that, but listen to all of that. So in the same breath, you completely ignore it, but you're just aware of it. So you can respond to it, but you don't get eaten by it. I'm paraphrasing him. But it's kind of why do you think as humans we're just so, you know, smitten with this whole idea of just like, yeah, all those little things, they really matter, when actually what we're saying is the big stuff is what really matters. How do we get so distracted?
So I think it's the blessing and the curse of social media and the information age. I mean, you think about this, you know, 20 years ago, the amount of information that was accessible to business owners was probably a lot less compared to this. I was barely, you know, I was like 3, 4 years, 5 years old at the time, 20 years ago. So I can't say, you know, I've lived 40 years of experience between the two, but based on my research, based on what I've been, you know, looking at, because I think this is a fascinating question, you know, on one piece to your point of the virality, you know, point, TikTok has become such a big point of businesses' strategies. And again, I think TikTok's a great, you know, platform for reaching a demographic. Now, one of the things that I think a lot of people overlook when it comes to specifically TikTok is it feels like people are searching for that 5 minutes of fame or the 15 minutes of fame. Can I have one post that goes viral that gets a million views or, you know, 1,000 likes or whatever that looks like, and I've made it? And what's fascinating is the amount of people that have been successful on TikTok that have gone viral. I mean, some of our clients, they're on TikTok. They've had a couple of videos that have had over, you know, 3 million views, let's say. And what they've gotten out of that is basically nothing. You know, maybe they've gotten some more followers. Maybe they've gotten some increased reach. Maybe they got a couple purchases. But from the effort that it took to get to that level, in my mind, it really wasn't helpful. Because, I mean, perfect example of TikTok. We know people that have 250,000 followers. They're consistent on videos. They're pushing out content. You know how many views that they're getting on a daily basis for their videos on average, traditionally? They're getting like 600 views, 700 views with 250,000 followers. And again, it, you know, they're doing what would consider to be, you know, they're having videos go 10,000 views, 30,000 views. But what's fascinating is there seems to be a disconnect between this, like getting a bunch of followers, going viral, having success, and actual business success. Now, back to your point of the fact of like, why do we fall into this? I think we're all great marketers of ourselves. I think if you look at it from a broad perspective, we're not putting on social media the minute that a customer sends us an email about how they hate our services, how terrible we are at what we do. We're not posting that on social media, quite frankly. And so what we're posting is when we get that $1 million sale, or when we go $1 million, you know, or a million organic views on TikTok, like we're posting about that and how successful we are. But I think what people overlook is we're putting our best version of ourselves out there, which everyone is doing. And it's a good thing because it's increasing positivity, and we're pushing this, you know, I guess, like, I don't know the right terminology, but we're putting this aspect of our lives out there that we've got it all figured out as businesses, as individuals. And I think at the core, no one truly figured, you know, has it figured out. You look at these, even these big CEOs, and they don't have it figured out. They might be better at business than us, but on a grand level, they're still solving problems on a daily basis. And so what I think kind of has happened is we've gotten so good at marketing ourselves just personally, professionally, through social media, that we're kind of just kind of lying to each other of we're not putting all of our cards on the table. We're only showing our aces and our kings. And at the same time, while it might be good, there's so many people struggling while they're doing the same thing that it really does not help for us to get distracted by these things. You know, when we see businesses post about their wins, what we don't realize is on the same token, they're going bankrupt or they're having financial issues, or, you know, like perfect example. I mean, we were talking about family the other day, you know, before this podcast, And what I find is fascinating is this is more on a business level, but I think it relates to the marketing world is, you know, here I see so many people that are successful as business owners. They have multi-million dollar companies. They're really not posting too much on social media about how successful they are. So you actually know they're like pretty successful. And what's fascinating is the amount of individuals that are putting business over their families at this current moment. You know, they're willing to chase a dollar and sacrifice their family's life in order to make that extra dollar, which in some aspects, sometimes you have to do as a business owner, but their families are being ruined. And while they're successful business owners, their, you know, business, their family life is absolutely terrible. They're getting divorced. Their kids don't know who they are. And so I think it's all relative when it comes to marketing, when it comes to business, of what success is for you. Is it $1 million in your bank account? Is it your kids knowing who you are? You know, and so I think going back to your point on, you know, marketing on outside and all the success and people getting down and things like that, we're such good marketers and we're putting out consumable content, but at the same time, it's not beneficial too.
It feels like the way you've described that, it feels like this is the age of authenticity. Just a little phrase I've just made up there, but it kind of feels like summing up the way you've described there, that, you know, if we want to be developing these brands, both personally and professionally, you know, and on behalf of obviously our businesses, that actually will properly resonate. It feels like we've got to be so authentic. You know, it's great putting out the positive news, but also then maybe we do start to open up a little bit. Maybe, you know, Brené Brown talks a lot about, you know, vulnerability being of the key kind of commodity that we can all be using really, really effectively as humans. And maybe this is the time that, you know, authenticity actually includes vulnerability. As long as obviously it's not commercially sensitive stuff, you wouldn't release things into the wild that, you know, you really mustn't talk about because contractually it's wrong, or, you know, you're in a regulated industry or something. Yeah, go carefully with that, guys.
Yeah, maybe don't post like your bank account statements online, but
and possibly not that bit. Yeah.
But I think to add to that, I think we've been in, you know, because we've, you know, over the past 2 years, we've been in this data-filled, personalized marketing field, let's say. So the past 2 years with AI, with automation, with all these different tools that marketers have, it has been this segmentation focus. How do we become authentic? How do we resonate with our customers? But I think I would add to your, you know, the age of vulnerability. And I think what I would add is the age of truthful vulnerability, because at the same token, I think some marketers have done an incredible job of being vulnerable. But what they've done is they've used that to put, you know, the top of funnel to where it leads into leads. So perfect example, there's these, you know, joke posts going around on LinkedIn, on social media, where it starts out and it's like, I was homeless. And then 3 months later, I made my first million. And now I have my Lamborghini, my Bugatti, and my private plane 6 months later. And if you want to be like me, take my course and I can teach you how to become a millionaire. So there was this age of vulnerability where the, you know, if we're diagnosing it from a marketing perspective, from the hook is like that vulnerability. Like, I was almost divorced. My business had $25 in the account. We had lost all of our clients. And where the vulnerability truly isn't full vulnerability is we're taking advantage of one key aspect, and then we're expediting the entire process to sell some sort of product. So what we're encouraging our clients to do this year is, how do we tell the story of the business? How do we get extremely vulnerable with, you know, one of our clients, they went bankrupt twice over the course of a 30-year period. But what that is now they're a multi-million dollar business. And so there's a story behind struggle. There's a story behind the customers that continued, you know, giving them business over the course of this, you know, very tough period. And so there's a story to be told about, like, life wasn't perfect for this business. There were struggles, but at the core, the customers that continued supporting them were the key to that. And so there's stories for brands to tell on this full, truthful vulnerability that can lead to that, like, ultimate marketing, you know, push for this year. So, you know, to add to your point, I think we could be truthfully vulnerable, and I think it's going to be successful for 2024.
Love it. I think, yeah, that's a thing that we can all reflect on. I think this is a scale as well, isn't it? What we're not necessarily suggesting is that everybody suddenly opens up the doors and says, right, we'll tell you everything about everything that we've ever done as a business. You know, it's about being selective, isn't it? It's about being careful and, yeah, just authoring, you know, relevant content, relevant messages, having those real deep conversations, and yeah, just being a, as you say, you know, really kind of truthful, honest, and wholesome kind of organization. How do you think kind of AI is going to feed into that? You know, we've all had a year of this sudden explosion of opportunity in terms of content creation. You know, generative AI, machine language, this, that, and the other. You know, there's a huge amount of opportunity in here, but also quite a lot of fear. I've noticed, you know, from a lot of people I'm talking to and supporting, they're kind of quite resistant, but it's fear-based. How are you seeing that play out with your clients?
So it's a really good tool to help our clients, but at the same time, we can't be self-reliant on it, is what I, you know, we've been talking with our clients of, because, you know, to your point, I think there's a lot of fear of what is this? What, like, is it authentic? Is it true? Things like that. Is it providing relevant information? But I think to another token, it's saving a lot of time. It's becoming efficient. And my point to that would be, I mean, you look at any, like any marketing tool, you know, Ahrefs, if you look at social media, if you look at even like different pieces of content, everything was kind of regarded with this like concern. And it took a couple people to really push the bounds to realize like this tool is kind of here to stay. And it seems like with AI, like, you know, to our point, this entire conversation, AI didn't just pop out last year. Like it's become popular, but they've been working on AI for the past 10 plus years. So it's built to, you know, to stay around for quite some time, and we have to adopt and be used to that, or else it's kind of like Facebook. The businesses that were concerned to be on Facebook are now kind of catching up to the times. You know, people were concerned to be on Facebook. Well, now they're like behind the times and they're trying to catch up. Same thing with TikTok. Everyone said that they would not get on TikTok, me included. You know, when TikTok first came out, man, we don't know what the vulnerabilities are. We don't know what the security concerns are. These people started doing it. Well, wouldn't you know, during COVID, suddenly I'm on TikTok and now I have not gotten off of it. But I made this promise myself of like, I'm not getting TikTok. It's dangerous. It's all this. And then here we are. So it's that kind of adoption period. And I think we're getting close to that adoption period with AI, where it can truly help equip businesses with better content and, you know, resources that they don't have to worry about. And I think to one level, I think of it as, you know, a system that you can build internally. So ChatGPT, for instance, or OpenAI, they have an API where, in my mind, if you can train an AI model without having to build an AI model, how incredible is that? You know, we have accessibility to an AI model that can learn from us without having to invest hundreds of thousands of dollars into building this AI model. And so to me, you don't have to use it to just build social media posts. What if you used it and continued having conversations with it over the, let's say over the year, and built this model where you're telling it all of the conversations that you're having, all of the internal discussions you're having in your mind? I mean, perfect example, had a couple situations where I've had to send a couple emails off and respond to a couple people, and there's emotion at play. And so how do you remove the emotion? Well, you go into your model. It knows about my educational background. Like, I've trained this model. I've gone in, you know, put the email that was sent to me, and then I put the email that I wanted to respond. And I said, like, clean this up for me. Take the emotion away. Like, make this a professional email. And wouldn't you know, like, it spit out a very professional email that encapsulated everything that I wanted to say without the like screw you kind of verbiage on that at the same time. And so I think there's a lot of power behind that of like, you know, we're experimenting it with LinkedIn. Like, if you tell your experiences, if you tell your stories, it can continue to like connect all of those together and make some really great LinkedIn posts that while you didn't create them, like it's taking all of your aspects of your life and it's creating great content. And so to me, for those that are scared, like you don't have to use it out in public, but like continue to just try it on your own and see what you think. Like, you know, you have accessibility to these AI models that can really make some really great decisions in content. I mean, perfect example, there's a large company here that I was working with, and they're a, you know, like a restaurant chain. And what they were experimenting was, using AI and automation within their software to where it could predict the, you know, the time or the, you know, at the specific time, what the weather was going to be. And while that individual was ordering through like a drive-through at their stalls, it could provide recommendations based on the weather that would fit. So if it's cold, hey, try a cup of coffee for 99 cents. Or if it's hot, you know, try this slushy for, you know, a discount or things like that. I mean, if you think about that, we're talking about personalization. That is true personalization, is providing as much value for what your customer could expect and delivering that to them and putting it on a gold platter. And so while there might be some hesitancy towards AI, I think we can all start to adopt that it's going to stay around. And if you don't jump on it, you're probably going to be left in the dirt. I mean, that's probably a terrible way of phrasing it and a terrible way of thinking about it, but I think it's something that we all have to consider.
I agree. It's the reality. It really is. And I think, you know, this last 12 months of, you know, it has been an explosion of attention. I mean, if anything could have gone viral globally in every single industry, every single discipline, it was AI. Just sudden the recognition that, wow, there is this resource. It's interesting when you talk about it, Caleb, in terms of it being part of the personalization thing, because so that's a really great example, and I'm sure lots of people could translate that into their own world. But it just made me think there just for a minute that if anybody's struggling with personalization in their marketing, is there, and I suppose this is a rhetorical question, is there an opportunity to use ChatGPT, others are available, to kind of have that conversation and say, look, I've got these particular products and services. If I wanted to personalize these to these individual descriptions of my target audience, and I've got like maybe four or five different descriptions, we've got persona, you know, profiles for each of them, what would you recommend? And actually get into that conversation with GPT to ask it for ideas for personalization, because often it's quite difficult, isn't it? You know, marketers are considered to be relatively creative people, but I wouldn't say I'm necessarily the most creative. I can use somebody else's idea and build upon it. So maybe that's how GPT could serve me, but I'm not great at initiating the original idea. I don't think I've ever had really an original idea in my life. And yet I'm fine as a marketer. So it's kind of, is it, do you think, using something like GPT to almost, you know, have it there as an additional part of your team? So either client side or agency consultancy side, that we can actually then help it to form the kind of business ideas, form that personalization, begin to help create some of these campaigns. Because it feels like if marketing, going back to our earlier point about marketing being seen as a cost, well, this is a really cost-effective way of spending our time as marketers, isn't it?
Absolutely. So there's, in my mind, I think there's two ways to approach it. One, I think to some level, ChatGPT is perfect for this, because you can start to talk about the profile, the persona, and say, you know, our typical customer is between the ages of X and this. They're in these locations, like tailor some ads, you know. Perfect example. I mean, you know, we've talked about this. Like, I think someone in Manchester versus London, they're the same person, but they're absolutely different at the same time. They have different mannerisms. They have different ways of thinking. And so if we have an AI model that kind of has this information that's been able to scrape, you know, websites about Manchester versus London and the differences culturally and what they value, things like that, why not use that to build better? I mean, I'm sure, you know, let's say, you know, if we think of a broad scale, we're based in Oklahoma, you know, we're pretty small town, like very conservative, very, you know, our biggest city is nothing compared to New York City. So if we have a client, you know, obviously with the internet age, we can serve clients across the US. We have a client in Boston. If we're trying to build messaging around what someone in Boston wants, someone in Oklahoma probably does not know the exact terminology. They can probably do some research. But again, from an agency perspective or a marketing perspective, that's a lot of time to research. Why not use GPT to essentially expedite that process and say, here's what we're looking for, make it personal to this specific location or persona, and build that. And I think it's a great tool for that, because it allows for, you know, information and basically informed decision making. Now, where I think we have to be careful of is we also don't want to be self-reliant on it. You know, like, the other thing that I see is, I see a lot of business owners that are using it for social media posts. And what they're doing is they're copying and pasting the entire, you know, what it spits out, not editing it at all, and posting on their social media. So like, I don't know about you, but like, I can tell when AI has written it. Like, it's like, hello, welcome to this adventure of, and then it's like, all right, like no marketing individual actually thought of this. Like, it's pretty easy to tell. Most consumers probably don't know because they're probably not in the same environments. But I think there's a piece of it where we have to be somewhat careful of, like, we still want it to feel personalized. ChatGPT isn't perfect. Like, we have to continue to train and coach it. But to your point, there are so many ways that we can expedite the time that it would take and the resources that it would take from both a business and an agency level, which is why I think ChatGPT-4 is, you know, perfect for this.
Yeah, it feels like we're kind of highlighting, you know, a number of really kind of key things that people can focus on here. I know we said we'd keep this really focused on, you know, early 2024. What's going on? What's the update? What are the key kind of themes emerging? I mean, to me, it is personalization. It is this whole thing about appropriately vulnerable communications or kind of authenticity, you know, wrapped up into that. It is obviously trying to embrace AI and all its kind of various guises. The personalization theme seems to come across all of this. It just feels like a real thread. And also really kind of, I guess, embracing this caution that our customers have right now and just kind of reflecting back to them, it's okay to take your time with the decision. You don't have to just jump into the purchase, whether it's a B2C or B2B. It's like, it's okay to be considered. And then actually reflecting our communications back in what for them might be quite a sensitive moment. It really might be. It's, you know, we've got to commit all this money to this purchase and we just want to take our time. And then actually as a brand owner or a marketer saying, that's okay. We're with you, we understand. And actually, if there's anything else we can do to help in that decision, you know, we're here to serve you. And I think there's some real nice themes here about just settling down, guys. You know, just, you don't have to race. It's a hectic thing. It's chaotic out there. But if you do this right, it just feels that if you're thoughtful and mindful, you can really crack it. Do you think I kind of summed up?
I feel like you just hit like a really good piece of gold that I think we have to slow down on this podcast and just dissect just quickly. I think what you just said about the fact of we have to help that consumer in their purchase decision, you know, like we have to be available to help them if it's if our conversion window takes double the time, we need to equip them with the tools and the resources to make that decision. And so I think, like, that's where personalization really comes in, is like slowing down and breaking what you just said of like, what can you use for AI to like help automate a journey of that longer conversion window? Or how can we build better, you know, product descriptions, or, you know, can we offer financing, things like that throughout the process that just makes, so you just recapped it. Absolutely brilliant. And I feel like that's a piece of gold that all the listeners have to take away, like from the actual episode. Like right there was just the core recap that explains all of this 40 minutes that we've just been talking about.
Oh, that's brilliant. That's a really kind of you, Caleb. I wasn't searching for a compliment there, but yeah, it was just, I thought I just got to capture this thing because it's been some real kind of gems in this conversation. And I'd love, if it's okay with you, I'd love to do this again, maybe in about, say, 6 months time, just revisit. Okay, we're here now in mid 2024. How's it all looking? And we had these ideas back at the beginning of the year, and now it's looking like this.
Caleb Roach said that you had to adopt AI or else you get in the dirt, and actually OpenAI is now no longer existent. So I'm just kidding.
It's all going to morph. This is the whole thing though, isn't it? It all morphs and evolves, and you know, we've got to put our eggs in some baskets. It doesn't necessarily mean everything goes into OpenAI, but I think it'd be pretty safe bet, I would have thought, at this point in time. But yeah, it'd just be really interesting to kind of see, not that we'll hold ourselves against it, but I think, you know, time, and obviously, you know, time pressures and stuff, you know, they will kind of change and morph into sort of different things. So maybe, you know, 6 months time, we'll have another little review if you're up for that, and see where we take it.
I think it'd be really beneficial. I think, you know, by then we should know more what's happening with the economy. And I think, you know, I think just in general, I think, you know, I in my mind, middle of 2024 is a pivotal point of, you know, for both marketers and businesses, because I think at that point, we'll know, have we kind of gone over the edge financially as economies, or have we continued to strengthen that and kind of rebuild? So I think it'll be really fascinating to see just in general what happens and how all of this changes.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. Yeah, it's exciting times to be a business owner and a marketer. So yeah, embrace it. It is really, and hold on tight, I think is the key, isn't it? Just hold on tight. Yeah.
Well, I think to your point, though, I think hold on tight, but also have the patience and slow down. You know, I think, you know, with I think we have to just to recap what you said, like as marketers or business owners, we have to know this is going to take longer than we expect. We have to know that the buying process is taking longer. So not only do we have to be prepared to hold on, but we have to patiently hold on. You know, if we have some great leads in the funnel, but they're just not converting, we can't consider that a failure, but we have to continue to warm them and try to see. So I think it'll be an interesting 2024 to see what happens in the marketing world.
Absolutely. Kelly Roach, thank you so much for your time. I'm going to put all the connection links and stuff into the episode notes. So if you're watching this in whatever channel you're watching this, you'll be able to connect with Caleb should you wish to. It's goclubcreative.com is Caleb's website that you can then schedule a call, a conversation, and hopefully potentially some consultation. You know, Caleb is an absolute expert on all of these things. So thank you again for joining me today.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Neil. I appreciate it. And hopefully your audience got something out of this.